Monica, no last name, was standing outside my office when I got there, writing on the back of the note I had taped to my office door. I walked toward her. She was too intent upon her writing to look up. She was a good-looking woman, in her mid-30-somethings. Ash-blonde hair that I thought must be natural, after a morbid and involuntary memory of the dead woman's dye job. Her makeup was tasteful and well-applied, and her face was fair, friendly, with enough roundness of cheek to look fresh-faced and young. Enough fullness of mouth to look very feminine. She was wearing a long, full skirt of palest yellow with brown riding boots, a crisp white blouse, and an expensive-looking green cardigan over it to ward off the chill of early spring. She had to be in good shape to pull off a color combination like that, and she did it. Overall, it was a naggingly familiar look, something like Annette Funicello or Barbara Billingsley, maybe. Wholesome and all-American. Monica? I asked. I put on my most innocent and friendly smile. She blinked at me as I approached. Oh, are you, Harry? I smiled and offered her my hand. Harry Dresden, ma'am. That's me. She took my hand after a tiny pause and kept her eyes firmly focused on my chest. At this point, I was just as glad to be dealing with someone who was too nervous to risk looking at my eyes. I gave her a firm but gentle handshake and let go of her, brushing past her to unlock the office door and open it up. I apologize for being late. I got a call from the police that I had to look in on.
You did?
She asked.
You mean the police,
She waved her fingers instead of finishing the sentence and entered when I held the door open for her. Sometimes, I nodded, they run into something and want my take on it.
What sorts of things?
I shrugged and swallowed. I thought of the corpses at the Madison and felt green. When I looked up at Monica, she was studying my face, chewing on her lip nervously. She hurriedly averted her gaze.
Can I get you some coffee? I asked her.
I shut the door behind us, flicked on the lights.
Oh, no, thank you, I'm fine.
She stood there looking at my box of discarded paperbacks and holding her purse over her tummy with both hands. I thought she might scream if I said boo, so I made sure to move carefully and slowly, making myself a cup of instant coffee. I breathed in and out, going through the familiar motions until I had calmed from my encounter with Marconi. By the time I was done, so was my coffee. I went to my desk and invited her to have a seat in one of the two chairs across from me.
Okay, Monica, I said. What can I do for you today? Well, I told you that my husband she nodded at me, gesturing. Missing, I supplied.
Yes, she said with an exhalation of almost relief. But he's not mysteriously missing or anything, just gone. She flushed and stammered,
like he just packed up a few things and left. But he didn't say anything to anyone, and he hasn't showed up again. I'm concerned about him.
Mm-hmm, I said. How long has he been gone?
This is the third day, she said.
I nodded. There must be some reason why you're coming to me rather than a private investigator or the police. She blushed again. She had a good face for blushing, fair skin that colored girlishly. It was quite fetching, really.
Yes, he had been interested in
magic?
Yes, he had been buying books on it in the religion section at the bookstore. Not like those Dungeon and Dragon games, the real thing. He bought some of those tarot cards.
She pronounced it like carrot. Amateurs. And you think his disappearances might have had something to do with his interest?
I'm not sure, she confessed. But maybe. He was very upset. He had lost his job and was under a lot of pressure. I'm worried about him. I thought whoever found him might need to be able to talk to him about all this stuff.
She took a deep breath, as if the effort of completing so many sentences without a single mm had tired her. I'm still not clear on this. Why me? Why not the police? Her knuckles whitened on her purse.
He packed a bag, Mr. Dresden. I think the police will just assume he left his wife and his children. They won't really look, but he didn't. He's not that way. He only wants to make a good life for us. Really, that's all he wants.
I frowned at her, nervous that maybe hubby has run out on you after all, dear. Even so, I said, why come to me? Why not a private investigator? I know a reliable man if you need one.
Because you know about...
She gestured fitfully. About magic,
I said. Monica nodded. I think it might be important. I mean, I don't know, but I think it might.
Where did he work? I asked her. While I spoke, I got a pad of paper out of my pocket and jotted down a few notes.
Silver Co., she told me. They're a trading company. They locate good markets for products and then advise companies where they can best spend their money.
Uh-huh, I said. What is his name, Monica? She swallowed, and I saw her twitching, trying to think of something to tell me other than his name.
George, she supplied at last.
I looked up at her. She was staring furiously down at her hands. Monica, I said. I know this must be really hard for you. Believe me, ma'am. There are plenty of people who are nervous when they come into my office, but please hear me out. I am not going to hurt you or anyone else. What I do to help people. It's true that someone with the right skills could use your names against you, but I'm not like that. I borrowed a line from Johnny Marconi. It isn't good business. She gave a nervous little laugh.
I feel so silly, she confessed.
But there's so many things that I've heard about wizards. I see. And I put my pencil down and steepled my fingers in wizardly fashion. The woman was nervous and had certain expectations. I might ease her fears a little if I fulfilled some of them. I tried not to look over her shoulder at the calendar I had hanging on the wall and the red circle around the 15th of last month. Late rent, need money. Even with the fee from today and what I could make in the future, it would take the city forever to pay up. Besides, I could never resist going to the aid of a lady in distress. Even if she wasn't completely 100% sure that she wanted to be rescued by me. Monica, I told her, there are powers in the universe that most people don't even know about. Powers that we still don't fully understand. The men and women who work with these powers see things in a different light than regular people. They come to understand things in a slightly different way. This sets them apart. Sometimes it breeds unwarranted suspicion and fear. I know you've read books and seen movies about how horrible people like me are, and that whole suffer a witch not to live part of the Old Testament hasn't made things all roses, but we really aren't any different from anyone else. I gave her my best smile. I want to help you, but if I'm going to do that, you're going to have to give me a little trust. I promise. I give you my word that I won't disappoint you. I saw her take this in and chew on it for a while staring down at her hands.
Victor, she said at last. Victor Sells.
All right, I said, picking up my pencil and duly noting it. Is there any place he might have gone that you can think of offhand?
She nodded. The lake house. We have a house down by...
She waved her hand.
The lake?
She beamed at me, and I reminded myself to be patient. In Lake Providence, over the state line, around Lake Michigan. It's beautiful up there in the autumn. Okay, then. Are you aware of any friends he might have run off to see? Family he might have visited? Anything like that?
Oh, Victor wasn't on speaking terms with his family. I never knew why. He didn't talk about them, really. We've been married for 10 years, and he never spoke once to them.
Okay, I said, nodding that down, too. Friends, then. She fretted up her lip, a gesture that seemed familiar to her.
Not really. He was friends with his boss and some people at work, but after he was fired...
Mm-hmm, I said. I understand. I continued writing things down, drawing bold lines between thoughts to separate them. I spilled over to the next page before I was finished writing down facts and my observations about Monica. I like to be thorough about this kind of thing.
Well, Mr. Dresden, she asked me, can you help me?
I looked over the page and then nodded.
I think so, Monica.
If possible, I'd like to see the things your husband collected, which books and so on. It would help if I had a picture of him, too. I might like to take a look around your house at Lake Providence. Would that be all right?
Of course, she said.
She seemed relieved, but at the same time, even more nervous than before. I noted down the address of the lake house and brief directions. You're aware of my fees? I asked her. I'm not cheap. It might be less costly for you to hire someone else.
We've got quite a bit of savings, Mr. Dresden, she told me. I'm not worried about the money. That seemed an odd statement from her, at the time, out of tune with her generally nervous manner. Well then, I told her, I charge $50 an hour plus expenses. I'll send you an itemized list of what I do, so you'll have a good idea of what I'm working on. Our retainer is customary. I'm not going to guarantee that I work exclusively on your case. I try to handle each of my customers with respect and courtesy, so I can't put any one of them before another. She nodded to me, emphatically, and reached into her purse. She drew out a white envelope and passed it over to me. There's $500 inside, she told me. Is that enough for now? Ka-ching. $500 would take care of last month's rent and a good bit of this month's, too. I could get into this bit with nervous clients wanting to preserve the anonymity of their checking accounts for my supposed sorceress might. Cash always spends. That would be fine. Yes, I told her. I tried not to fondle the envelope. At least I wasn't crass enough to dump the money out on my desk and count it out. She drew out another envelope. He took most of his things with him, she said. At least I couldn't find them where he usually keeps them, but I did find this. There was something in the envelope making it bulge, an amulet, a ring, or a charm of some kind, I was betting. A third envelope came out of her purse. The woman must be compulsively well organized. There's a picture of him in here, and my phone number inside. Thank you, Mr. Dresden. When will you call? As soon as I know something, I told her. Probably by tomorrow afternoon or Saturday morning. Sound good? She almost looked into my eyes, caught herself, and smiled directly at my nose instead. Yes. Yes, thank you so much for your help. She glanced up at the wall. Oh, look at the time. I need to go. School's almost out. She closed her teeth over her words and flushed again, as though embarrassed she had let such an important fact about her slip out. I'll do whatever I can, ma'am, I assured her, rising and walking her to the door. Thank you for your business. I'll be in touch soon. She said her goodbyes, never looking me in the face, and fled out the door. I shut it behind her and went back to the envelopes. First, the money. It was all 50s, which always look new, even when they're years old because they get so little circulation. There were 10 of them. I put them in my wallet and trashed the envelope. The envelope with the photo in it was next. I took it out and regarded the picture of Monica and a man of lean and handsome features, with a wide forehead and shaggy eyebrows that skewed his handsomeness off to a rather eccentric angle. His smile was whiter than white, and his skin was smooth, dark tan of someone who spends a lot of time in the sun, boating, maybe. It was a sharp contrast against Monica's paleness. Victor Sells, I presume. The phone number was written on a plain white index card that had been neatly trimmed down to fit inside the envelope. There was no name or area code, just a 7-digit number. I got out my cross-listing directory and looked it up. I noted that down as well. I wondered what had the woman expected to accomplish by only giving out first names when she'd been going to hand me a dozen other ways of finding out in any case. It only goes to show that people are funny when they get nervous about something. They say screwy things, make odd choices which, in retrospect, they feel amazingly foolish for making. I would have to be careful not to say anything to rub that in when I spoke to her again. I trashed the second envelope and opened the last one, turning it upside down over my desk. The brown husk of a dead, dried scorpion, glistening with some sort of preservative glaze, clicked down onto my desk. A supple braided leather cord led off from a ring set through the base of its tail so that if it was worn, it would hang head down, tail up, and curled over the dried body to point at the ground. I shuddered. Scorpions were symbolically powerful in certain circles of belief. They weren't usually symbols of anything good or wholesome either. A lot of petty, mean spells could be focused around a little talisman like that. If you wore it next to your skin, as such things were supposed to be worn, the prickly legs of the thing would be a constant poking and agitation at your chest, a continual reminder that it was there. The dried stinger of the tail tip might actually pierce the skin of anyone who tried to give the wearer a hug. Its crab-like pinchers would catch a man's chest hair or scratch at the curves of a woman's breasts. Nasty, unpleasant thing. Not evil, as such, but you sure as hell weren't likely to do happy, shining things with magic with such an item around your neck. Maybe Victor Sells had gotten involved into something real, something that had absorbed his attention. The art could do that to a person, particularly the darker aspects of it. If he had turned to it in despair after losing his job, maybe that would explain his sudden absence from his home. A lot of sorcerers or wannabe sorcerers secluded themselves in the belief that isolation would increase their ability to focus their magic. It didn't, but it did make it easier for a weak, untrained mind to avoid distractions. Or maybe it wasn't even a true talisman. Maybe it was just a curiosity, or a souvenir from some visit to the Southwest. There wasn't any way for me to tell if it was indeed a device used to improve the focus and direction of magical energies, short of actually using it to attempt a spell. And I really didn't want to be using such a dubious article for a variety of good reasons. I would have to keep this little unbeauty in mind as I tried to run this man down. It might mean nothing. On the other hand, it might not. I looked up at the clock. 3:15. There was time to check with the local morgues to see if they had turned up any likely John Does. Who knew? My search might be over before day's end, and then get to the bank to deposit my money and fire off a check to my landlord. I got out my phone book and started calling up hospitals. Not really my routine line of work, but not difficult either. Except for the standard problems I had using the telephone. Static, line noise, other people's conversations being louder than mine. If something can go wrong, it will. Once I thought I saw something out of the corner of my eye, a twitch of motion from the dried scorpion that sat on my desk. I blinked and stared at it. It didn't move. Cautiously, I extended my senses toward it like an invisible hand, feeling about for any traces of enchantment or magical energy. Nothing. It was as dry of enchantment as it was of life. Never let it be said that Harry Dresden is afraid of a dry, dead bug. Creepy or not, I wasn't going to let it ruin my concentration. So I scooped it up with a corner of the phone book and popped it into the middle drawer of my desk, out of sight, out of mind. So I have a problem with creepy, dead, poisonous things. So sue me.